Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and today on the Roundup, we're going to be covering the top three questions international admissions offices are asking this week. It's a trying week in our country. It's a trying week for our world as we come to grips with realities of our past and that have not been addressed in decades of legislation and complaints, and it's a trying time indeed, and we all know what we're talking about here. But for purposes of today, my thoughts and my heart is with all of my colleagues in international education who are deeply affected by what's been happening in Minneapolis with the death of George Floyd, and additionally around the country as people are beginning to have their voices heard and in loud measure. So congratulations to those of you who are out there fighting the good fight and letting your voices be heard. Today on the Roundup, we'll focus on what we can of the positive news in our world today as it relates to international education. So we'll start, as we always do, with what's happening in the news. And for those of you who are new to the Roundup, you're probably aware that we take news stories each week from our newsletter that comes out on Mondays, and that is called the SMIE, All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And we always like to take that time each week on Mondays to give you our live take on our hot takes on some of the key issues of our day and how they impact what we do here in international education. Now, for me in international education, my goal every week, as we through the newsletter and also through the Roundup here, is we take time to really go deeper on some of the core issues of the day. For those of you who don't have aren't subscribing already to our newsletter, I certainly encourage you to do that, to subscribe. Just drop the link into the comments section on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. Always encourage you to subscribe to that, get that on Monday morning, and you'll have a sense of what we'll be talking about come Wednesday each week. So thanks also to those of you who are watching this on repeat on our YouTube channel for SMIE Consulting or our Facebook page. And especially to those of you who download us on podcasts and have us as a part of your regular listening each week. So thank you for taking the time to do that. It's a time in our world that desperately is calling out for a reason. Whether we will see it in our lifetimes is another matter. But certainly we'll do all we can here at the Roundup and SMIE Consulting to shed some light on those issues that can help you do your jobs in international education. So first up is China. And where do we stand with China? We've known for the last 3 years, 4 years almost now, with the current administration and the stances that they've taken, really challenging China on a number of issues from trade, mostly trade, but also particularly with the pandemic and the blame game that's been played on that. There's been increasingly antagonistic tones been taken. And all of this past week, we were kind of fearing what might happen. There was some pieces of that occurred earlier in the week, last week, with legislation that was proposed by Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas. We also, from Senator Cotton, we had gotten a hint that this was coming from him a couple weeks ago, where he basically called on the president to ban Chinese students coming to the U.S., particularly in STEM fields. He's had that kind of as a personal crusade of his for a number of years. But this legislation that he initially came out this past week was an act that was signed by several other senators, but it was very general. Towards all, and in fact would probably have been more damaging if it moved forward. I don't think it will now, based on other actions that President Trump has taken, but it was focused on students that are taking advanced degrees, STEM degrees, master's degrees, and doctoral degrees in STEM fields, that they are those are students that are the largest source of, in his mind, the intellectual property theft that goes on in the U.S. That emanates from China. And the act he proposed, it was Inside Higher Ed covered it. We also had the Pi News covered in depth as well. In fact, they asked me for my comments on that situation, on that particular act, and I responded in the Pi News article version of it, of their take on it, basically saying that it was the kind of act, though it's unlikely to get passed, when I said it back, I think it was Tuesday last week, would represent if all Chinese graduate STEM students were all of a sudden painted with this ban or this potential to be have their visas revoked and sent home, that it would be a crushing blow for U.S. colleges that are already trying to salvage whatever they can from China in terms of admissions to the United States. And Senator Cotton's legislation was called the Secure Campus Act. And my take on it was really, it would be damaging. It represents basically red meat for President Trump's base, and really paints all Chinese graduate students with that are STEM focused with that they're spies. So that would, the not actual numbers that we're talking about here, if you look at Chinese enrollments in the United States, we're talking over 300,000. 140 to 145,000 of that have typically been graduate Chinese students. And we do know from STEM data that DHS puts out in their Cebus by the Numbers report that Chinese students, roughly half of all Chinese students, are STEM focused. I don't have the breakdown specifically for graduate students from China that I can refer you to right now, but using that same corollary of 50% of Chinese students being STEM focused, that could potentially mean 70 to 75,000 students that under Senator Cotton's legislation would be excluded from the United States and from studying here, and to prevent the theft of technology. So thankfully, but it seems like this act won't see the light of day now because of what President Trump did on Friday. And if you haven't seen the proclamation, that it was a proclamation on the suspension of entry as non-immigrants of certain students and researchers from the People's Republic of China. And this goes back to the issue that Senator Cotton was raising about intellectual property theft, that is, that whether it's, and Senator Cotton's proposal was much broader and painted all Chinese graduate STEM students in this category as potentially excludable from study in the United States. This one, I think, President Trump's proclamation here is I think the best of a worst case, best of a worst of a bad apple, in terms of the potential effects of it. Here it is laser focused in terms of the language, which is still not completely defined, but is much more focused on state-sponsored, and the equivalent of state-sponsored or state-funded students that come to the United States in STEM. It is on graduate STEM programs, but defining those students that are and researchers that are coming, having their studies, their research sponsored by what, and the language used is a fusion, military-civil fusion strategy. That students that and scholars that fell into funding from a military-civil fusion strategy, they don't define who those organizations are or quasi-governmental bodies are, but particularly the focus was on PLA, People's Liberation Army, and that their activities from China that are directly related to funding individuals to come over and study in these sensitive fields. Fortunately for many U.S. colleges, this ban does not apply to undergraduates. Neither this proclamation nor Senator Cotton's initial legislation affected undergraduate international students from China, but specifically grad, and in this case with the president's proclamation, much more laser focus. And there are, we've talked about this in the past on the roundup, where there were in February, FBI Director Wray testified that there were over 1,000 cases of intellectual property theft that have been documented in the United States in the last few years. And he, in his estimation, 900 of those originated from China. And that is the focus of this legislation, and I think Senator Cotton's proposed legislation. Obviously, when I say with the president, it's not legislation, it's a proclamation, an executive order, if you will. So the I'm sure there will be legal challenges to these. We never know we don't know until it hits the kind of appeals court at federal level that what the actual if it's going to rise to the level of getting Supreme Court attention. But certainly there will be challenges. There have been challenges to including legal challenges already to the social media questions that were added almost a year ago. Over a year ago now, by the State Department and by DHS to applicants for visas and visitors to the United States. So those are the realities that we're facing here in international education these days. And with regard to this proclamation, which has with immediate effect basically to prevent, we don't know what the numbers are again of that 70,000 number potentially. Of graduate STEM-focused students, how many of those that would be under the proclamation, how many of those are going to be government-sponsored or military-civil fusion strategy that the government has in China with the Chinese Communist Party to fund these students and scholars to come to the U.S. and steal intellectual property. So that's what that faces. When I was asked by the PI about this in terms of the impact of it, with regard to the Cotton Act, which I was specifically asked about before the proclamation came out on Friday, I was asked, well, what do you think the impact's going to be? And I said very clearly, there's a lot of white noise out there when it comes to U.S.-China relationships, and there are a lot more kind of off-the-wall things that have been said over the past 4 years by the current administration, usually in tweets that have never really materialized into anything and anything's concrete. And that's part of the ongoing war of words between China and the U.S. The fires have been stoked by this president on numerous occasions. And this is where he's going to plant his flag. This is where the hill he's going to die on. So we'll see what happens with this relationship with China. And the actual numbers that are included in this proclamation, we don't know that yet. And I presume, and many commentators have also figured this out, that the reality is this is the language here was not specific to certain agencies or organizations within China and apparatus of the Chinese Communist Party that are funding mechanisms for this, because if they specify, then they would have to, anytime something new gets created to do a similar thing from China, from that end in China, they'd have to redo the proclamation. And just wanted to get, and the proclamation does give the broad authority to Secretary of State and Department of Homeland Security to make those evaluations as to who fits into those criteria. Assuming for now, it's going to be mostly on the back end. Obviously, the DHS folks have the ability to review currently enrolled students and scholars through CBIS to find out funding sources, and that's probably the initial source of this in terms of their analysis. And that's something that we'll certainly see how this develops and whether it'll have more of an impact on the front end, where we're already this fall looking at probably no new international students unless they're already stateside entering U.S. colleges, which we'll talk more about later. But we're certainly in a time with China where numbers had already been on the downward trend, not hugely downward trend yet, but certainly on the new international student side, we've seen that reality over the last 3-4 years, that those numbers have begun to decline in terms of growth rate, but also in a real numbers. So we'll see. We'll keep everybody posted on what's going to happen with that that next in, on the proclamation's impact. We'll talk and shift gears now to question number two, which is, what are colleges telling new students? And we've mentioned this before as probably the question of the summer, and that will determine a lot of your success as institutions moving forward. The ability for institutions to say definitively now what their plans are for the fall. To be very honest, no one is saying now we're going to be fully on campus this fall and actually be able to deliver on that. That's just if they're saying it, there's a 99% chance that's not going to happen, to be fully open as is, in terms of restrictions, in terms of not having restrictions and being able to operate as they have in the past. You certainly can say you're going to have resident living happen this fall, but certainly instruction and regular campus life, it's never going to be the same for quite some time, and certainly not this fall. So what the reality is of what colleges are telling new students. If your institution has already made the commitment to be online only for the fall, or to have fall only online and then be able to transition to on campus in the spring, that's probably the safest bet. Certainly the CSU campuses have all taken that. We talked about that last week. And we've actually in our newsletter this week, we also included an interview that Inside Higher Ed did with the Cal State chancellor of their system that educates over 430,000 students each year, about what the concerns were in California for reopening. Other California schools have also followed suit. We talked last week about University of Cambridge in England going online only for almost all of 2020-2021 academic year. Found out today on an international ACAC webinar that statement was made, and it only applies to lectures. All their lectures will be online only for the next academic year, but there will be on-campus living potentially and small groups and those types of things that will be able to happen. So the online only is the safest way to go, but many institutions are going for the hybrid model, some kind of versions, one of the 15 that we talked about with the Inside Higher Ed series over the last month or so. But the reality is, what you tell your students now, if you're saying we're going to be on campus, you have to be 100% certain. And when we're talking about international students, are you going to put yourself in the same position as President Jenkins at Notre Dame, where they made the decision at Notre Dame to go 2 weeks early, to start 2 weeks early and end at Thanksgiving? Since then, and we'll cover this in next week's newsletter and roundup, is President Jenkins at Notre Dame sent a letter to Secretary of State Pompeo and Homeland Security Chief Wolf, asking for them to do everything they can to streamline the visa process, because they now realize that they probably did already. I won't put it past them, but that they already knew this, but they are having to go, oh crud, for international students that are outside the United States. They're hearing from people like me and others that are saying having a full international class this fall from overseas, not going to happen. You'll be lucky to get a handful, unless they're already in the United States in status. So what's happened is, institutions that have made commitments to be on campus this fall and are now and have said we're going to do everything we can to get there, if they haven't already talked to prospective students, and I'm focusing on our international students here, if they haven't already talked to them about a different set of options for them that they will not be physically able to get. Knowing likelihood is that they won't physically be able to get to the United States to campus for fall. What are you telling your students, your prospective students that you have been spent the last year recruiting? What have you been telling them about this fall? They want answers, and we're going to cover next week a very intriguing QS survey, student survey they've been doing since March. They've just released their May results, and to see what students, where students are in terms of wanting to stay, go online, if they're guaranteed it's only going to be for a semester versus just a general, we're going to be online, or how they want to be communicated with, what they want to find out from universities and what universities are actually doing. That's where the real dichotomy and real disconnect is really happening these days, is what students are wanting to hear from institutions and what universities are actually telling students, and how infrequently or frequently they are getting those messages and the kinds of messages that they need to hear. So there's a lot of mixed messages going on out there from universities saying, yeah, we're going to be on campus this fall, but we're planning for contingencies. But what does that really mean for an international student who will not be able to go get a visa until it's too late, that will not be, maybe but not even be able to get on an airplane? We've just seen what President Trump has done today. They're banning entry of Chinese airlines into the United States now. Previously, U.S. airlines have been banned. United, Delta, who fly regularly to China, were hoping to restart this month flights, but there seems to be a kibosh on that right now as well. So we don't know when international travel is going to reopen. We don't know when consulates and embassies are going to reopen and have appointments this summer for students. We don't know if there are going to be quarantine periods for students if when they are reentering. And if they are able to reenter, are there going to be testing requirements? That's before a student can begin studies, they have to have a negative test. That might be an institutional requirement that you have, even after a quarantine period, or a way to get students out of quarantine early. We don't know what that is yet for the fall. None of those decisions have been made. There are going to be campus decisions that you're going to be making in terms of, okay, students in quarantine, are we going to be putting them up in university housing and that like Canada had done in the spring term, where their new students that were subject to a two-week quarantine were put up in university housing and had meals brought to them each day. Is that something your campus is able to do? It's certainly going to be something you have to do if you're telling them you can be on campus, and we're gonna take care of you. That's certainly something you really need to be thinking through. So it's not really clear what that's going to be. We talked a little bit I was on a webinar last week with folks from Synorbis, and I'll have that link in next week's newsletter to that. And there was an article they did on that as well on that fireside chat we had. But about what some other colleges are doing right now, thinking outside the box, that have been proactive, that have said, for our new international students, we value who you are and we want you on our campus. That might not be possible this fall, but we want to make as close to an in-person experience for you as possible. And what they're doing is they're saying, come to one of our study abroad sites where we have somebody that's going to be on site to help you through. Franklin and Marshall has a camp a provider in Shanghai that they're going to work with, and they're inviting their 30 to 60 new students from China to go to that site for instruction. There are others that have other partners overseas or other locations overseas that are leveraging those to try and get as much of an in-person feel for a cohort of students that might be coming together for study. So there are other countries are also doing similar things and are being creative as they can. There are things that institutions are doing, like IU, Indiana University. They have previously required deposits from international students. This year they're not. They're giving them flexibility and just asking them to send us an intent to enroll before they send out an I-20. So there are all these other things that universities are trying to provide students a sense of opportunity to still achieve their dreams this year, though it may not be the ideal situation being physically on university campuses. They are able to come up with solutions University of Arizona, we talked about this 2 or 3 weeks ago. They launched their global campus, their University of Arizona Global, where they have locations around the world that students can physically go to get instruction this fall, and then make the transition to on-campus enrollment in the spring, perhaps. There are a great article in Inside Higher Ed that I've dropped the link to that kind of talks about what the expectations are for new international students at a lot of different colleges. Great article in here. My colleague Brian Gross at Western New England University is quoted in here about what they're expecting. Todd Reinhardt at University of Denver, he's the incoming NACAC president, and Ahmed Ezzedine at Wayne State in Detroit. He's also quoted in here, and he's speaking very clearly that he's not expecting new internationals physically on campus this fall. Certainly, Ahmad, I get where you're coming from, dude, and it's not going to be an easy one, but you're thinking about what the realities are, and you're trying to come up with solutions for your campus. So more power to you, and I hope you get what you need for this from this class for this fall. Now, last topic I want to cover, we'll touch on briefly. It's one of my favorite topics in terms of how we connect, institutions connect with students. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm not a baby boomer. I'm not a millennial. I'm that in between generation that we kind of get glossed over a lot, but we're the ones that seem to be driving things forward these days. But and kind of keeping level heads when it comes to these things. But to be clear, when I talk about with the next generation, after millennials, the next generation is Gen Z. This is the generation of students that have been born after the millennium. These are students that are really the first fully digital generation. And they have they consume media differently than millennials do. They expect certain things. They are focused on video. They are focused on peer reviews. They are focused on things that that are time-sensitive decisions. And internationally, you know what I'm talking about here. You have students who you'll get emails from or chat messages from that they want answers immediately, at most 24 hours. So how you respond matters more now than ever before, and how quickly you respond, and the method that you use. And the article that we're talking about here is actually in the Pi Review, put out by the Pi News folks. This is I think it's almost a monthly news magazine, really, that they produce. And Carrie Kennedy does a great job in this article, really referencing the power of peer and the immediacy of what these students want to see from institutions and in terms of responses. With this Gen Z, we see students that are really looking for what authenticity. They can smell corporate pitches a mile away, and they're the ones that really are not going to put up with a lot. They're called the YOLO generation. You only live once. So they frankly, and the article makes a great point here that they can afford to be highly selective in where they go, where they spend their education dollars. And it's worth a read. And I certainly, for those of you who know me, using social media and digital outreach as an essential tool for reaching your target audiences overseas is absolutely core to what I believe. But if in this post-COVID world that we're living in, or still getting through the COVID world into a post-COVID world, now more than ever, digital strategies, robust digital strategies, are essential components. And if you don't have them, you're going to fail. And that's something that I think more and more colleges are waking up to this fact. And I certainly wish and happy to talk through these issues with any colleagues who are struggling for answers at their institutional campuses. But for now, know that I'm with you. I hear you. I see you. I feel you. We are we're in the valley right now. But there is another side. There is a mountain to climb. and we will get there, and we'll get there together. So thanks again for joining us on the Roundup. We look forward to catching up with you in the weeks to come. Cheers.